The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
Yeah, what's it to you?
And as always, we have Brian the engineer helping us out behind the glass. And
yay, Brian!
For those of you who are watching us on the live web camera, we have our social media guy is actually setting up stuff and taking pictures for the Facebook page. That is our very own Steve Guillaume, no relation to Robert Guillaume. He says I got his name wrong after all these years of knowing him in high school for about 20 years.
I thought you said
you've
known him since high school.
Yeah,
you got
20
You get every
years.
Name wrong.
Yo, that's my thing. I get the
you
I get the name
the names wrong.
At least I didn't call him Stefan. So he says it's Stefan Galeim. So anybody who's watching us on the web camera, you know, oh, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Now they all know.
We're very hip. We have a social media guy.
Yeah, he's our social media guy, yes. So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see us on the webcam, as I mentioned in 10 seconds ago.
How you doing?
In high definition.
High def.
High def, yes. we'll just take it away with the news.
Who died?
Actually, we have no sad news. Well, not really anyway. But the news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, who are the official show.
We
of
love
the
them.
Big Apple Con. They are having a convention next week, 6 days from today, on December 6th.
I can hardly contain myself.
Yeah, they're gonna have Timac from The Last Dragon. He is the lead. He would play Bruce Leroy. They're going to have Brian O'Hallahan, who is the lead on the movie Clerks. And we will be there. So we're going to have a table. We're going to have prints and stuff and whatnot and a super cool banner that we're still working on getting.
I'm working on it as the show is going, as the show is feeding live.
And also, they're going to have their 20th anniversary of the Big Apple Con, which is going to be in March. And they're going to have none other than Jason David Frank, Tommy the original Green Power Ranger, as the headliner for that. So we'll be there also.
Yes.
The casino is the house of the WinterCon, which is www.nywintercon.com. And it's a one-day event from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then after that, there's an after
party in the 360 Lounge, which I've been to.
Which has
and
a
it's,
huge TV.
Oh, my, yeah. Right behind the bar is this TV the size of Guatemala.
Yeah, and it's and as far as I know, you know, it's free to come in because usually the after parties are free.
Well, the after party will go from the
upstairs,
third floor to the second, whatever it is.
And
and whoever, if anybody hasn't been to the casino or resorts world, it is an amazing place.
Yes.
And it's you have to experience it just for the con is going to be amazing at this place. It is. We spoke about this before, having a convention in a place other than just a warehouse or a convention center
right,
where there's so many things to do. Like if there's a break in the action, you don't have to just, you know, sit in the corner like
staring
by
at
a door
other.
Someplace wishing you had enough money for food.
Yes.
You can go down to the casino, take that quarter, put it in a slot, win millions.
And then come upstairs and spend
those
millions.
and just say, I won millions, and leave.
Oh, you don't even spend the millions upstairs?
You can if you want. Like that guy, maybe you could buy a comic book.
Yes, one comic
one
book.
Comic
just
book.
One.
First edition comic book. But anyway, all kidding aside, it is an amazing place. I want everybody coming down, not only to go to DuCon, but to visit us and just take in.
Yeah, check out our table.
The amazingness of it all. Is that a word? The amazingness of it all, yes. Of it all? Okay.
We should have like some t-shirts that we're going to be wearing. We're going to look like a uniform actual group.
Yes.
Steven is going to be there doing some stuff, and he's practicing right now for it. So yeah. you'll be able to meet Steven in person. Steve in person.
Yeah, Steve. You've known the guy since high school. Call him Steve.
The S-Man. S-G. S-G is what I used to call him back in the day.
He probably, when you called him that, said, yeah, what an idiot.
In 20 years, I'm never going to see this guy again. That was his plan. In 20 years, never see him again. So, the news. Let's see.
Oh, forgot about that.
Yes, we actually have news. Hunger Games Part 3, Part 1 pulls in a disappointing $123 million for its opening weekend, making it the highest opening weekend for a movie in 2014.
I'm so disappointed.
Beating out Transformers Part 4, which only pulled in $100 million. Opening weekend. Transformers 4 just came out with Mark Wahlberg.
I didn't even know that.
That was part 4. That's terrible.
That's how much I was interested in.
That movie was really bad.
Yeah, did Michael Bay do it or somebody?
Michael Bay did it. No wonder why I didn't see it.
Okay.
So that may only made $100 million. So this is the highest opening weekend of any movie of 2014.
Only $100 million.
But as I just mentioned, they make this is considered a disappointment opening for Hunger Games, because Hunger Games Part 2 opened at $158 million and the original opened at $153 million. So this one only started at $123 million. So they're highly disappointed
in this. They're disappointed about that opening, and there's many more nights people have to see this thing.
Well, no, the opening weekend. So it'll make more money, okay. But it's just the opening weekend.
I'm so disappointed myself.
Really? You're really disappointed that they only made $123 million?
Yeah, I'm really, my heart bleeds for them. Move on.
Okay. Speaking of bleeding hearts.
I wasn't speaking of bleeding hearts.
Andrew Kreisenberg, I'm sure I messed up his last name, producer of the shows The Flash and Arrow, has confirmed that just like Smallville before it, they are not allowed to incorporate Batman or Wonder Woman in their TV show. However, they still have full access to the rest of the DC Universe. He says, there are things we can do, and there are things we can't. I'm a huge fan of Nightwing, but there are cities we can, and there's everything else. So you won't be hearing Gotham or Metropolis on the show at all. So no Batman, no Wonder Woman in the DC Universe.
Thank you, audience. I felt the same way.
So what's weird is that no follow-up questions to the people in the audience. No, you can't. No, you have to wait. Steve is gesturing that he has a question, but no, he has to do his job and take pictures. No talking.
Steve can ask a question.
Well, he can't ask a question because people can't hear him on the radio.
Steve, what's the question?
So in the last episode of Flash, they mentioned that Wayne Enterprises buys Queen Enterprises.
They can say Wayne Enterprises, but they cannot say Metropolis, they can't say Gotham, they can't say Batman, they can't do any of that stuff.
And they can't say anti-disestablishmentarianism either.
Exactly.
There you go.
So, once again, DC is making a misstep into their trying to copy Marvel. Marvel has a TV show that incorporates the movies. They're trying to make this one, quote-unquote, shared cinematic universe, where DC constantly is like, know this, know that, know this, know that, but we still want the same amount of money that Disney's making with Marvel. It's weird.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I tell? I don't care, actually. I really don't.
You really don't care?
Move on. Yeah, I don't care. I'm still worried about the disappointing $123 million. That's what I'm still worried about. Me and Brian want to take, like, just half of that. Yes. You heard it here first.
Moving along, from the, quote, you have to find out for yourself department, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that Disney released a new Star Wars trailer exclusively in theaters this past Friday. Shortly thereafter, it was leaked online, and then the teaser trailers were officially released everywhere. Actually, I think we have one of the trailers on our website, on the Facebook page. I have personally speaking, I have made it a point not to see the trailer, nor the subsequent backlash that's come out of it. But it seems that there's some type of uproar going on about the trailer because, you know, people love pulling it apart and having problems with it. And no matter where you are, you're seeing little news snippets everywhere about stuff. But I'm not clicking it. I'm just putting on a blind eye because I just want to see the movie. I don't want to hear any of the stuff. But it turns out that one of the biggest problems, which I'm not completely sure about, is that there is some type of uproar over a new form of lightsaber that they have in the movie. And there's rants and raves. They're storming down Disney on this new title lightsaber, which I have not seen or plan to see, but it's just one of those things that people are going to be talking about for months and months and months.
Well, it's manufactured by Zippo. That's why they don't, you know, the lighter company. So
yeah, I know.
And they don't use anything other than Duracell.
Duracell batteries.
Yeah, the industrial strength.
Industrial strength for the lightsabers.
Yeah.
So, and also, I just caught a glimpse of this. There's also some type of black stormtrooper going on that they're complaining about all as well, because right. The stormtroopers should only be white. So, it's one of those crazy things. But the movie doesn't come out until next year, December 2016. So, you know what? If you guys want to find out about it, you'll have to find out for yourself. However, we will just kind of just be glossing over this information and letting you know that the Star Wars movie is coming out 2014.
Send the information to you. What you want to do with it is
your prerogative.
It's all you.
What
else?
So speaking of Star Wars,
Mr. Segway.
It turns out that guys who I follow, which is called the Super Beatdown guys, who I've mentioned before on the show,
right?
They've had the Green Power Ranger versus Scorpion from the Mortal Kombat series. They've had Darth Vader versus Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings. They take two characters from different universes and have them fight to the death. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the whole Star Wars thing, they decided to make a Batman versus Darth Vader. I've seen it. It's awesome.
Wow, the Dark Knight versus the Darth Vader.
Yes. And it's really cool. It's really cool. They've also had Batman versus Wolverine and Batman versus Deadpool, but now
really?
So they have three Batman episodes now, and Batman got killed by one, and he beat the other, so he's a one for one on this one and going into this match. And Darth Vader,
Batman, he's such a nut.
And Darth Vader, I believe he killed Gandalf, so he's 1-0.
I would like to see a crossover where Darth Vader versus Zool.
How would that even work? How would they even fight?
Well, he would send the Marshmallow Man to Darth Vader's house and whatever.
You mean chop up the Marshmallow Man with the lightsaber?
He would never do that. Because that's Zool. You don't mess with Zool.
So, for those of you interested,
during the rectification of the Valdrani, he came in as a larger moving sword. No, go ahead. I digress, so, though.
Isn't it that Azul would use the fears against him? So what would he send to Darth Vader?
Well, anything Darth Vader thought of, whatever was in his thoughts. Like if he saw a big Luke Skywalker, Luke Skywalker would come in and he is the destroyer. Yes.
All right.
You know.
So if you guys want to check out this awesome fight, which
not with Azul,
not with Azul.
Because you didn't segue.
Darth Vader versus Batman. It's online. You got to go to Superpower Beatdown, and it's right there. You can't miss it.
It's right there.
Speaking of Power Rangers, that I was just mentioning earlier.
Mr. Segway.
And it's actually kind of appropriate that our social media guy is in the studio with us, because if you recall last week, I had a whole discussion about Sharknado 2 and the Power Rangers finale, the Super Mega Force finale, which they had the whole cast come back, you know, actors from the past 20 years come back and
yes.
whatever, and how disappointed I was in watching that episode.
Right.
Turns out that I was not the only person who was a fan of this series who expressed their disappointment. They went online in droves, posting videos on how disappointed and how upset they were about this. I actually posted one of my favorite ones, because he was just cursing up a storm, and it was just hilarious seeing this 23-year-old kid talking about this passionately and cursing up a storm like no other on how upset and disappointed he was in this episode. And I did a little research, and you can see how everybody's upset about this thing. And then on Monday, so this happened on it aired on Saturday. We had our show on Sunday, and then on Monday, out of the blue, And I believe that social media had a hand in this. Nicktoons, Nickelodeon's who airs the Power Rangers Super Mega Force, decided to air an extended version of the same episode.
Look at that.
At 11 o'clock at night. And like I said, there was no preview, there's no information. I mean, it wouldn't make sense to have a regular episode and then have an extended episode unless they had some reason to show an extended episode.
I think we were the cause of that.
So, and it turns out that they added more footage. It was, instead of being a half an hour show, it was they added 15 minutes of additional footage. So it helped it a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, they added like two fight scenes, which kind of made the flow a little more smooth. I still had my own complaints about the thing, and even had a couple of people had a line or two, which they had no lines originally in the original airing. Of course, you know, Jason David Frank being the most popular character, he had an extra scene that they added in there. And, you know, they aired it, and I didn't even know about it, but for following Jason David Frank's social media page, and he said, "Hey, guys, in 20 minutes, they're going to be airing an extended version of the episode on Nicktoons." So it wasn't promoted, it wasn't anything, and so had I had not followed, you know, the information, I would have never seen this, and, you know, I would have gone to my grave knowing only the 22-minute version, which blows my mind as to why in the world would you have an extended version and then not air it originally? Like, did the company think that this was good enough, and then backlash happened?
No, the company didn't think it was. The director, again, this is what I always say, this is my pet peeve. The director tends to play with what is successful. And he's so egotistical that he think in his mind, he's creating something that he thinks everybody wants. But what he's not realizing is that for how many years?
20 years.
This worked, this formula worked. So leave it the hell alone. So now, when it didn't work, now he's, let's go back to the extended version. And that's why he did it.
So so you think it's because of the director that he had one version and then
he had his creative version.
Right.
You know, and you know, I guess it's unfair to say, you know, you can't be creative because sometimes it works.
Right.
But in this case,
it didn't work.
It's like you should consult with other people. Like you should consult with the fans. And like, ask the fans, like, give them a scenario.
Right.
With the multi-choice and see what that brings in. And then you do your movie accordingly.
So I'm amazed that this actually happened. You know, the power of social media, as I've been told, is incredible.
Well, Hawaii Five-0 had an episode where you called in the ending. And I thought that was brilliant. That was one of my favorite TV shows.
Right.
And you call in the ending. And it was fabulous. So, you know, I think if you're doing something of this, you know, this popular, if you're doing something with a show that has been this popular, I think you need the fans to get involved. And I think you should let your ego go a little, because if you do that, you make a lot more money, number one.
And happy fans.
And happy fans, yeah.
But isn't the saying always, don't give the fans what they want? Isn't that what they say? Don't give them what they want because then they'll be satisfied?
Yeah. They said that in Grease, too. They said that. They said that in a lot of movies. You know, they said that in Staying Alive. Yeah, all those movies they said that in.
This reminds me of two things. I mentioned this story many times when I went to a convention and the writers, Rick Berman of Star Trek, Next Generation, was at a convention. There was a panel and they were talking. Yeah. And this was after Generations had came out, when William Shatner and Patrick Stewart came together and they had the two casts come together. And somebody had mentioned on the panel, they were like, "Hey, you know," they had the questions in the audience, and the guy said, "Hey, you know, in the movie Generations, there was a warp core breach and the ship blew up and you know, all this stuff happened. But in the TV show, they had the exact same situation happen where they had a warp core breach and they just ejected the warp core and everyone was happy. What the hell? What's going on here?" And the guy says, and this is the executive producer writer of the Star Trek franchise at the time, he goes, "It's just a movie." like what? That's the worst defense. And yeah. He didn't care. Obviously, he didn't care about the fans. For him to not only not remember that they did that, but right. just be like, eh, it's just a movie. What are you talking
it's
about?
It's like when they were busting John Lennon's chops. He says it was just a band. You have the albums when they were all upset about the Beatles. But it was just a band. You have the albums. You can listen to them. It was just a band. You know? But I think, and I'm glad we have our social media gentleman here, Steve, I think that I came upon a new thing of that would help ratings of any show. I think the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. should use this. They go online the week before.
Right.
They have several endings, and they give the fans the choice of endings to make. I think a show should come on the air, a very popular show, something that's been out a while,
right.
that give the fans the choice, and it'll be their series.
So basically, it's like a reality show with a scripted,
reality shows aren't scripted.
But you know, like the voting show to American Idol and whatnot, they vote people off and they kind of decide.
The writers get the ideas.
Right.
They do that.
Right.
And they have most of the show, you know, intact, except the ending. The way directors set up alternate endings anyway.
Right, right.
Because if that was the case, maybe I would have enjoyed Skyline. but I think the fans should be the ones running
right.
the show, because the fans are the ones that made that show popular.
Yes, and it does remind me, my last thing before we take our break, way back when in Married with Children, they had a call and ending in. It was the Valentine's Day episode, and it was one of the few, actually, it's probably the only time I've ever actually called and voted on one of these type of things. Yeah. You know, you had to pay like the 50-cent call, I had to get my parents' permission to call, but
right.
it was an ending where Al would say that he loves Peg and have, you know, relations with her, or say, nah, not tonight. And that was the choice. And it was a live, you know, it was a live voting, and he, you know, voted, and then at the end, he said he loved her. That was the whole thing. We're like, yeah. Like, I voted and I won. I felt the political process in my mind. I was like, yes, my vote counted. It didn't really count, but it was still kind of nice to see.
It's not only for the sake of my vote counted. It would be for the sake of the fans. Instead of fighting the director, they can fight the other fans.
Yes.
They're like, what are you, a maroon? What are you, you know?
Why'd you pick that?
And the director could be like, Humphrey, hey, you know.
Which reminds me, tying it all back together to the Superpower Beatdown, the results of the fights are all done by voting. So and they do film both endings, and they do, you know, this is the official one where the fans voted for this one, and then they have the other one. Oh, just in case you want to know what would happen, this is how it is. So
yeah, I think if I had enough money, I would put a series together where every week.
So that's what we're gonna do.
And during the week, the fans could go online.
We'll make a serial, like with the, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Monkey Killer.
Yeah.
We will do that as a serial, and we'll keep on making different endings to see for the next week, to see how he escapes the monkeys that are flying on the flying sharks chasing after him. Yeah. That's what we'll do.
Good idea, Monk.
We are ready for our break. We'll be right back with Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back from Kingpin Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking the official radio show, the Big Apple Con. This week, we have special guests. Only one. I was hoping both of them would be there, but we have special guest, Sarah Brawley. Say hi, Sarah.
Hi, we're actually both here.
Oh, we do have Sarah and David. Sarah Brawley and David Phillips.
Hi, Sarah and David.
Hello.
From the High Fructose Zombies. I'm sure you remember them, that they came in. Actually, they called in 2 years ago, was it? That you guest on the show? We met them at the New York Comic Con 2 years ago, and they had one issue, and now they've grown amazingly with their product. So it's not just a comic book, but it's also tie-in products, which they will tell us all about, won't you guys?
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
So we'll have the first question. So, first of all, how did you guys meet? We already know this answer, but how did you guys meet, and how do you work together?
Well, Sarah and I are actually married, and so we met back in 2008, back in Los Angeles, and we got married, I think, 3-4 years later. But in the midst of all that, we came up with the comic book, which is High Fructose Zombies.
And then 3 days after our wedding, started on issue one.
And now you're up to issue 5, right?
No, we actually have through issue 6, and we have them as individual issues, and then launched the trade of issues 1-6 at New York Comic Con this year.
And why don't you share the pitch that you've been saying for many, many years now of what High Fructose Zombies is about?
Yes,
absolutely. So when a brand new candy bar called Snack Attack starts turning people into zombies in the small, humble town of Sweet Tooth, it is up to Clea Brown and her ragtag group of friends to stop the evil Yumzy Corporation from raining down the sugar apocalypse.
She uses her giant lollipop to decapitate and otherwise force the zombie horde.
Ah, I love that so much. So, where did you get that idea from? let's start with that one.
It originated, we were out hiking one day, and we were just throwing around ideas, and we're talking about Monsanto and big food, and that combined with our love of zombies.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just like, well, we were also trying to figure out how to advance the zombie genre, because right now it's all about disease or a cure to a disease gone horribly awry. And high fructose corn syrup is pervasive in so many foods, so if that was the cause,
the zombifying agent, that would definitely set off a zombie apocalypse. So we thought that would make a fun new chapter in the zombie saga.
Now, the main character, Clea, right?
Yes.
She has a quite similar hairstyle to you. Was that on purpose, or was that just a side thing?
I actually drew her first with her half-shaved head and thought it was so much fun that I then followed suit and had that haircut for
2 years.
The last two and a half years, I think, and I'm just now in the process of growing it out very slowly.
You guys are probably most famous for on our show as being the most happiest group of people who have their own comic book out. You can even tell that they're giggling right now, and they're just such a great team that comes together to do this.
And that's why they got married.
Yeah, is that why you got married?
Because they made a great team.
Because we made a great team?
Exactly.
And it's called love. That's what it is. Yeah. Mutual cohabitation. That's my definition of love.
Is that really?
If you can live with somebody without killing them, then you're in love.
Okay.
There you go.
So is the outlet for killing zombies to keep the love going?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I don't know. We're both, obviously we fit well enough to get married, but we both are workaholics, and we both want to, like, come up with fun projects to work on. And we were spinning around ideas of, like, what could we work on together. So the comic book made a perfect fit where I can write it. Sarah will draw it. Sarah inks it. I'll lay flat. She'll do the full colors. I'll do the production work. And it just worked out really nicely.
And then we've added in the layer of the merchandise that goes with it, because I do custom figurines. So I do that for the book. And, yeah, kind of our skills merge together and make it all happen.
So tell us more about the merchandise, because when I saw you last time at the New York Comic Con, you were in a little corner of the convention, and you had all these figurines, and you said that they were selling like hotcakes.
Yeah, this year we moved from small press over to the Block, which has a lot of the art toys and, you know, custom toys, and that fit us because I've expanded our idea to zombie confectionaries. We have hand-sculpted cupcakes with eyeballs, zombie floats. We have kind of a storyline in the graphic novel with these kind of these lab rats that are a little too smart, so I had figurines of those this year.
You have the zombie rats, zombie cakes, zombie floats.
Zombie creams. We had some...
Zombie babies.
Yeah, we had some characters from the comic book as well with the Easter Brothers, which are the Yumsyland mascots.
Oh, yeah.
We had those, and then anthropomorphized Snack Attack candy bar with teeth.
you also actually had the candy bar to sell at the convention, too.
Yes, indeed. We do sell the candy bar that will turn you into a zombie.
Is there a warning on that might turn you into a zombie on the bag, just in case?
There is a warning, yes.
Oh, yes, of course. We always label all of our food accordingly.
well, the odd ingredients it has.
I think that was brilliant. I think that is just such brilliant merchandising and promotion of this book.
And, we have fun with that.
And one of the things about the issues that I have, on the back you have advertisements for the different candies, and the fine print, the legalese, is like the best thing ever.
Oh, thank you.
Where did you come up with that stuff?
We've always been into agitprop and subversive advertising, and so it made a perfect fit with what we were talking about to come up with additional foods like the s'mores soda and the gummy gals, and that way we could talk about, A, it was just fun, B, we were able to talk about sort of more subversive ideas, and C, it added a really great level of world building.
Yeah, we like the idea of, you know, envisioning the whole world in which the story takes place, and it just gave us another avenue to expand that world vision to give readers a better sense of this bizarre world that's related to ours, but a little bit out there as well.
So when you decide to do world building, is that the first thing that happens before you decide to make a comic, or is it an ongoing process?
It's a combination. There's you know, the first level of world building that you need to kind of understand the world before you can put your characters in it, both in terms of writing and then visually. For me, drawing, I did a bunch of concept art before we started, you know, figured out what Yumsyland would look like and all of that. But then it definitely is a continual process as you get new ideas.
Yeah, I mean, we start with, you know, like, it should be some sort of, you know, food product that's filled with high fructose corn syrup. Okay, well, that could be soda, that could be candy, that could be, you know, candy bar. That could be this, that could be that, that could be that. And so you end up just filling your brain with all of these possibilities, and you're like, well, we got to focus on one, but how else can we use these? Because we have a bunch of really cool ideas. Well, we could use it this way, that way, and so we just started, like, either I would come up with the product, and then she would draw it into the comic book, and then I would make the advert, or she would add it in the back, and I'd be like, oh, that's so great, and then I would end up creating, like, a more fleshed-out advert for it.
I think our favorite world-building thing that came from making the book was when we first made the first issue, we had this idea of it being, you know, very edgy for an older audience, and we had swear words in it. And then, of course, all these little kids are like, zombies, candy, I want it. And we're going, oh, my gosh, you know, we have swear words. so we changed the swear words to candy swear words. So it's, you know, fudge and gumball.
What the crepe,
which actually, A, made it clean for kids, but also created a better candy world. That was a great thing to come out of the process.
Yeah.
Well, I see big promotions. I see big franchise here. They did it with Willy Wonka. That was a movie, and all of a sudden the candy started coming out, so I'm thinking you should go for this.
We're doing what we can.
Yep, there you go. Hey, you guys seem like you're so on the same page together. Was there ever a time when you collaborated where, you know, you disagreed? And if you did, how did that work out?
We've been pretty, we're a married couple. Like, we
no, I mean, we definitely, you know, you may have different ideas. We kind of use the improv idea of yes and. So when someone throws, it helps. When
there you go.
An idea, you know, if you feel like it's not complete, instead of going no, we do a kind of yes and then build on it and kind of go back and forth evolving the idea until we hit a place where we both feel satisfied. And that definitely, A, it creates a better outcome, yeah. But it also makes, you know, no one feel like, my idea is stupid, you know. It really has worked for us and made it so there's not really conflict.
I think the other great way that we go about it is we never start with, like, what's the one thing? We go,
yeah.
Can we come up with 20 things, and then whichever one we both agree is, like, the coolest out of that.
Oh, that's
we'll
brilliant.
Grab
yeah.
that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
And now I do remember that you said when the graphic novel came out, you went back in and you put color in for all the rest of the black and white issues.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we kept the only one we kept in black and white was issue one because we liked the representation of that first. It was our first comic effort ever, and it had been drawn to be in black and white. So we kept that as, like, you know, to represent that moment in time. And then we colored the rest of the graphic novel since it was a candy world that really needed to be in color.
For us, the graphic novel is really almost a time capsule. So you see issue one and you're like, this was our awesome starting point where we had gone from nothing to something.
Yeah.
And then with every subsequent issue, you see, oh, wow, they learned this much from the previous issue. And you see how much better it gets every
yeah.
single time.
It's a fun evolution.
It really is.
So speaking of evolution, what's next for you guys? Are you actually going to start your own candy company?
Well, we have the overview for ARC 2 written, and we're right now in that moment of figuring out whether to continue self-publishing or work to get it picked up by a publisher.
Yeah.
We've worked out issue 2 so that it can be standalone or follow volume 1. And it's taking it from a local level, which is 1 through 6, and
Sweet
taking
Tooth.
It from Sweet Tooth to a national level for the story. Yeah, we'll see where that goes.
So we were just talking about social media earlier in the show, and I know you guys started with a Kickstarter campaign for your book. How do you feel about social media in comics in general?
I think it's a great way for smaller self-published artists and writers to get their stuff out there. Kickstarter is definitely helpful in a multitude of ways. One, you kind of get advertising from being on there. You're searchable. Two, you know, you get funding that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And three, it really makes you beholden to the people who have funded you. So that helps motivate you in those darker moments of creativity where you're like, but I, you know, they've already bought this. I have to finish this thing that I've started, and I think it helps give you energy to get to that final finish stage.
Guilt and deadlines are great motivators.
Yeah. And then obviously with Twitter and Facebook and all of those, it's a helpful way to promote your work.
I think that both Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I would say that all of them are really good, quick ways to connect with your audience because yeah, we can't afford a social media team. Like, we don't have a street team to go help us get the word out. Yeah. But if we're able to, like, quickly throw up the stuff that we're working on, throw up photos, and sort of, like, let people know that we're still creating stuff and they're still connected, we're still connected, it's a great way to, I don't know, bond with the people that like you and what you do.
Well, and then when people Google you, a lot of images come up and information. So it just, you know, any presence helps, basically.
So yeah. With, as you said, deadlines and guilt, a lot of times, you know, people get up and they go to work and then they work either in a studio with the other creative people or they work at home and then they email stuff back and forth to get the book done. You guys are living together. So right there is like it's a completely different horse. I mean, do you guys feel you complement each other so much so that there isn't a dark time, there isn't a, I don't feel like doing it because my partner's right there doing stuff, or is it always just go, go, go?
It's pretty much all go, go, go. a little bit to a crazy point for the last 2 years. We pretty much go continuously.
It's been, well, this is kind of how it works. You see the other person working, and you're like, well, I'm not going to be the one to take back this comic. And so you end up motivating each other continuously.
And it's nice that the time that we're spending together, we can also work. So, you know,
we're always sort of across from each other in any sort of...
We share an office.
That's the big issue with doing creative work when you're in a relationship. You end up, when you're not working with your partner, you would end up possibly ignoring that partner. Yeah. And so this worked out very well.
So you suggest that everybody out there just marry whoever they're working with and be great.
There you go.
It's
worked for us.
It's worked very well for us.
I mean, besides you two, the only other couple I could think off the top of my head would be Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Palmer. They were, you know, probably the it couple, the power couple as it is for a creative process, and I hardly ever see them working together.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So you're like the
I think when I was in college and growing up, I always looked at Charles and Ray Eames. They were architects and designers. They're famous for their ergonomic chairs, and they were like the ultimate design couple that worked together. And I always wanted a relationship like that, and David has fulfilled that. It's great. It's nice to be a team and helpful.
I still can't get over how happy you guys are. Usually when we
leave them alone, they're happy.
It's just mind blowing. Usually we get all, you know, comic books and do this, but it's just so refreshing to have these guys after all this time because they're the same from the first time we interviewed them.
And still, after all this time, he still sounds so much like Hassan, our other co-host here. It's like we have him on the line here. Hey, I just have to mention one thing because I didn't want to let this go by, and because I am the senior correspondent, and I will forget. But I just wanted to say the way you did, like, the first edition in black and white, or in just black and white, and then the others in color, that is brilliant because, as we know, Night of the Living Dead, black and white. Every other zombie movie after that, color. So I'm thinking success is coming your way. Remember us when you're like a big candy moguls, big
you.
Candy and zombie moguls.
So the one thing I was wondering about the comic itself is that you have kind of an underlying tone against corporate America. Was that planned from the beginning?
Yes, we. Part of the idea of the book was to tell a story of corporate malfeasance, but you always have to balance any message like that because you don't want your graphic novel to be like message, you know, it's boring and no one wants that. So we wanted to tell the story of corporate malfeasance, but in a fun, lighthearted, kind of silly way.
Guide to corporate malfeasance.
Exactly. You know, that message was always part of the story.
Well, and I think every great zombie movie or story has always... It's never about zombies, really. It's usually using that as a trope to talk about a larger issue where, you know, like, maybe we can talk about certain zombie movies that it was actually talking about race in America versus actually zombies. It was talking about
consumerism.
We're going to the mall. You know, like, all of the best movies and television show, comics, so on and so forth, they're using zombies as a device to talk about a larger social cause.
Yeah, so we kind of followed suit for our story.
So we have about almost 7 minutes ago. So now's the time to promote any websites or anything you want to mention. This is the time. Promote away.
All right. Well, we have our website, which is highfructosezombies.com. We are on Facebook. Just type in High Fructose Zombies. We're the only ones. We are on Etsy for all of our zombie confectionaries. Again, just type in High Fructose Zombies. We are at HF Zombies on Twitter.
Are we on Instagram?
I am on Instagram as an artist for Zombies with Tattoos. You can see various pictures of my artwork for High Fructose Zombies and just for other artists.
So the big stuff is that we're going to have Volume 1 up online for sale this upcoming week?
This upcoming week on our website. We currently have issues 1 through 4 on Comixology, and 5 and 6 will be coming out shortly, as well as the whole graphic novel as a download. And
I would say the best way to make sure that you, if you're interested in High Fructose Zombies, would love to check out Volume 1. I would like us on Facebook. It's the best way to keep up with everything. Also, Twitter.
We post when things go online for sale, and you can always message us on Facebook or Twitter as well.
Okay. So for the high-end confection items, are they edible?
They are not edible. The only edible thing is the Snack Attack candy bar. The rest are custom figurines.
But having seen them in person, they look so yummy and tasty.
They do look
You should put like a warning on them, not edible.
Yeah. We have a lot of people come over at con and kind of poke them and ask if they're edible.
I love to think that if they were poking something that would be
edible.
They
usually poke it first and then ask. And you're like, well, maybe you shouldn't have touched it if you thought it might be edible.
Yeah. You should be like, if
part of con, people like to touch.
You should be like, if you touch it, then you have to buy it.
Yeah, there you go.
So, how does the process work when you're making something like that? I mean, is it a
the figures?
Yeah.
Well, I hand sculpt everything in Super Sculpey. It's like polymer clay, so it doesn't harden until you bake it in the oven, which basically is the equivalent of ceramics being fired. So it's much stronger because it's like a plastic based clay. Then I hand paint all of them and varnish them, and then sell them at cons and on our website.
So each one is an individual, one-of-a-kind item, even though you're following the same mold.
Yeah. Right now I'm doing them all by hand, no mold.
That's crazy.
It's kind of fun.
That's crazy.
I have a production line. I'm a factory of one, basically.
I mean, I've seen the amount of stuff you have at the convention. It's like, I can't believe you actually handcrafted each one individually. It blows
it's
my mind.
It's unnerving, right?
Yeah. It's kind of fun, you know, that way everyone gets a unique piece.
How much time do you take to prepare for a convention?
All the time.
it's a bit of time, because I do the figures for High Fructose Zombies, but I also, as a separate thing, I do custom action figures and collectibles for other comics. So it's kind of its own thing, separate from the drawing.
How long did you take for New York Comic Con? It was like 2 months or 1 month?
It was like 3 weeks. 3 weeks of solid prep for New York Comic Con for the sculpt.
Wow. My question is, how much Red Bull do you consume?
Coffee.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, definitely a lot of coffee.
There you go.
So we got 3 minutes left, so we're going to do some final thoughts. Sarah, do you have a final thought for us?
A final thought.
Final thought for us.
Always follow your dreams.
Well, I guess the final thought would be... since we did the block this year with the custom toys, I used to walk around cons going, how do I become, part of the... So how do I become one of those people, and how do I join the club? And I've realized from this whole process, you just have to start making stuff and put it out there, and that's how you become part of the club.
Yep.
You just have to make stuff. There's no secrets. There's no...
Before we started High Fructose Zombies, we had never made a comic in our lives. You know the best way to learn?
Just do it. And, just make it happen. Go to cons and put it out there, and that's how it works.
Wow. Charlie, you got a final thought for us?
I hope it's not my final thought, as Hassan always says, but we have the wonderful advantage of seeing the product here with us. You guys who listen to us don't, but do me a favor. Go out there, go on the Facebook, go on the website, and get this stuff. It's incredible and it's amazing, and you got to see it.
We actually do have some of the figurines on our website, on our Facebook page also.
Right.
So if you know,
but,
you want to check it out.
Our listeners, go out there and get this stuff. These people are creative, they're amazing, and they need to be seen.
So thank you very much, David and Sarah, for joining
thank
us
you.
Once again on I Came From Radio. Much success, and we will have you on as many times as you guys want to. You guys are great. It's so amazing and so uplifting. So
thank you so much.
Great to talk to you guys. I
have a question in my hand. Just hand it to me. What's your website again for the last time for you guys?
Our website is highfructosezombies.com.
So make sure you guys check out highfructosezombies.com. And that about does it for this week on A Came From The Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of our show, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. You can listen to our archives in a week or so. We'll be at the WinterCon next week. And like us on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.